I want you to try something with me tonight. I want you to close your eyes for a moment. Go ahead. I'm going to say a word, and I want you to see a face. I want you to let the first person who comes to mind when you hear this word, let them stand before your eyes. Are you ready? The word is hypocrite. Do you see a face? I do. I see the face of a high school senior's father who is at the end of his rope with his son. He's sitting across the table from me at a coffee shop. He begins to speak. All of my troubles, he says, come from my son. He's nothing but a big baby. He can't do anything for himself. He's a total waste, a zero, a good-for-nothing piece of garbage. And I told him so right to his face. I just can't wait until he turns 18, because then I can kick him out of my house legally and I'm free and clear. The worst thing is that all this stress is making it impossible for me to concentrate on my classes. I'm sure you know what I mean. You went to seminary, right? One thing's for sure. I'm not going to let that piece of trash stop me from becoming a pastor, he says. Hypocrite. That's the face I see. Do you see a face? I'm going to say another word. I want you to try again. Do you see a face when you hear this word? Backstabber. Do you see someone? Someone who is a betrayer? A traitor? I do. I'm standing out in front of my freshman year in high school English class. There beyond the doorway, against the locker, embracing in a passionate kiss are two people I know. The girl is the girl, my first real crush. The boy, my best friend. Up until that point, that is. Backstabber. You see someone too, don't you? One more word. Keep your eyes closed if it helps you. The word is sinner. I see the guy who lived down the hall from me sophomore year in college. I see him stumbling home drunk. I see him wasting another girl on another weekend. I see his eyes bleary from all the drugs. And I hear him laughing as we sit in the lounge together and he describes with pride how he passed chemical engineering. I sat beside the smart kids in the library, he explained, night before the finals due. I followed them to the professor's office. I watched them put their tests in his mailbox. When they left, I reached in and grabbed the one off the top. I copied the whole paper. I put my name on it. I threw his in the garbage, and I put mine in the professor's mailbox. And he was proud of himself. Sinner. Surely you see someone when you hear that word. Set their face beside the backstabber and beside the hypocrite in your mind for a moment. Look at them, all three of them, in your mind's eye, together. How do you feel about what you see? Grab your Bible and open up to Mark 10. These Bibles, this will be on page 822. Picture this. Jesus is in the countryside in Judea. He's in a small village, and he's been teaching there. The day is almost spent, and he's surrounded by crowds who have come to listen to him. There among those who are surrounding him, there are religious Jews. There are people of ill repute. There are old folks and there are young children. There are families. There are interested onlookers. There are disciples, as this man speaks. And Jesus blesses some little children. Do you know this story? It's a photo opportunity. A paparazzi jumps out of the crowd and takes a picture for a local political rag. Not that's our part, so I'm joking about that. All eyes are on Jesus. The crowd is silent. And then a man comes bounding out of the crowd, running right toward Jesus. Look at verse 17, chapter 10. As he was setting out on a journey, a man ran up and knelt before him and asked him, "Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" As all the eyes in the crowd were on Jesus, one man runs up and breaks the silence. And what he does is he kneels before Jesus. The Greek word that is translated kneel here is a bit too soft. It's from the word genuflexos, which is the word we get genuflect from. Out of this crowd, one man runs up and he throws himself on the ground before Jesus. He puts himself in a physical posture that communicates utter subjection to the man before whom he lies. He says with his mouth, "Good teacher." He calls Jesus the right thing. He asks with his mouth, "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" He says the right thing. But he says with his body, "You are my master and I am your slave." And everyone who looks on sees a man who on the outside looks to be the real deal, a true disciple, a genuine follower, someone who's ready to go about following Jesus. Verse 18, Jesus said to him, "Why do you call me good? No one is good but God alone. You know the commandments. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. You shall not defraud. Honor your father and mother." The man responds. He said to him, "Teacher, I have kept all these since my youth." All these? Every single one of these? Honored his father and mother since the time he was a baby? Do you think that the boy's mother was in the crowd? If she were, do you think that she would have laughed? Ah! Listen, this man, with his words and with his bodily actions, he appears to be a genuine disciple. But there's something else about this man that's true. And anybody who knows him, anyone who's been acquainted with him for any time, knows exactly what's true about it. And Jesus knows as well. This man who wants to make it look as though Jesus is his master, he has another master. Do you know what it is? It's his money. This man who throws himself before Jesus and makes himself look like a true devotee is in fact truly devoted, but to a different master. The almighty dollar, or in their day, the almighty denarii. Everybody who knows the man knows it, and Jesus knows it too. Do you know how this story ends, by the way? Jesus will tell the man that he can choose either to live up to the way he makes himself appear and follow him and let go of his money, or choose to hold on to his money and walk away. And do you know the man chooses his money over Jesus? Well, he makes himself look like a true religious man, but the reality is he worships money. Do you see what I see? This man is a hypocrite. And anyone with eyes to see it knows it. The crowd knows it. Deep in his heart, he knows it. And Jesus knows it. Look at verse 21. Jesus, looking at him, loved him. Everyone hates a hypocrite. Isn't that true? All the eyes there see this man pretending to be a true follower. And then he walks away so he can have his money and his comfort. And they're probably filled with hatred. But Jesus looks at this man and he loves him? Turn back a few pages. Find Matthew 9. This is on page 790 of these black Bibles. The book of Matthew was written by a man named Matthew. Do you know what Matthew was before he wrote books? Does anybody know? He was a tax collector. A tax collector was well known by all of the people from whom he collected taxes, and mostly because of how much they hated him. The way it worked in Israel was simple. A man would hire himself out to Rome, who was the official enemy of Israel, the oppressors, the occupiers, who held those people under their thumb to their own detriment. A man would hire himself out to them, and his job was simple. They would bring him into their care, and he would take money from his own people and give it to the enemies. He made his living by extorting God's own people, of whom he was supposedly one, so that he could pay off the oppressors and God's official enemies in Rome. As you can imagine, when a person saw a tax collector in Israel, they did not see something that they liked. It's clear that every time a tax collector is mentioned, in fact, in the Gospels, it's always to tell us that those who saw this person hated them, or rejected them, or wanted nothing to do with them. And when you think about it, a person who makes money by exploiting his own people, well, do you know what that is? That's a backstabber. And so, of course, nobody wants to see a tax collector. Whenever an Israelite saw a man like Matthew, they saw a traitor, and they were filled with hatred. Now, I want you to look at verse 9 in Matthew chapter 9. This is on page 790. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man called Matthew sitting at the tax booth. And he said to him, "Follow me." And he got up and he followed him. Listen, walking along the road, any other person would have looked at the tax booth and they would not have bothered to see who sat behind it, because it didn't matter to them who sat behind it. The man who was behind the tax booth was nothing but a tax collector to every Israelite, and therefore was nothing but an object of hatred, a traitor and a backstabber. And so no Israelite, as they walked along, saw anything but the tax booth there. They didn't need to see the man behind, because they knew in their minds already what he was worth. Nothing. But did you see that as Jesus walks along, he saw not a tax collector, but a man called Matthew. When Jesus walks along and sees this backstabber, he's able to look past the booth that he sits behind, and he sees the man who is back there. And what he sees when he sees Matthew is not someone to push away, not someone to keep at a distance or to punish for his betrayal, but what he sees is a man to call and follow him. He sees in this man called Matthew a potential follower, someone who can share in his work in the world, a disciple down the road, someone who can come along and do his work with him. Everyone who sees a backstabber sees someone they want to push away, but Jesus sees someone he wants to draw close to him. One more picture. Turn to John 8. This is on page 870 in these Bibles. Reading from verse 2. Early in the morning, Jesus came again to the temple. All the people came to him, and he sat down, and he began to teach them. The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery. And making her stand before all of them, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the very act of committing adultery. Now, in the law, Moses commanded us to stone such a woman. Now, what do you say?" The situation here is plain. This woman has been caught having sex with a man who is not her husband. These religious teachers have brought her before all of the crowds whom Jesus is teaching in the temple. And they announce before everyone what they see when they look at her. Right in front of Jesus and all the people who are there, they tell him, "When we see this woman, Jesus, we see someone who deserves to be stoned to death." And then they ask him, "What do you see when you look at her?" The story is beautiful. Jesus bends down in the sand and he writes with his finger. He stands up and everybody's staring at him. He does it again. He writes in the sand. And then he rises and he speaks to them. He looks at everyone and says, "Whoever has no sin, let him be the first one to throw a stone at this woman." And one by one, they all leave. So that there alone, Jesus is standing with this woman. Look at verse 9. When they heard it, they went away one by one, beginning with the elders. And Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. Everyone who was there, who had been there, saw nothing but a sinner when they looked at this woman. All they saw was her guilt, what she had done. Now they're gone. Look what Jesus says. Jesus straightened up and said to her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" She said, "No one, sir." And Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go your way, and from now on, do not sin again." Everyone who saw the sinner saw someone to condemn. Jesus saw the sinner and saw a woman to forgive. Everyone saw an object of their righteous condemnation. Jesus saw an object of his gracious, divine mercy. Everyone saw a woman to be put to death. Jesus saw a woman called to go and live truly without sin any longer. These three pictures raise a question for me. Who is this man? Who is this one who looks at the hypocrite and is filled with love? Who is this man who looks at a backstabber and calls that untrustworthy man to come alongside him and follow him and become part of the work he'll do in the world? Who is this one who looks at the sinner caught in her sin and sees someone to give mercy? Who is Jesus? Anyone who genuinely asks that question, who is Jesus? Any person who seeks truly to answer that question, they all must start in the same place. This book that we hold here in our hands, the New Testament, it gives so many pictures of who Jesus is. It tells all of the stories that the earliest disciples read of him. It puts into words the advice and the admonitions of those first followers to the communities that would come to know Jesus. Any person, any man or woman who wants to know who Jesus really is must come to this book, and if you do, he will show himself to you. And there will be many beautiful things that you will see if you set out on that search to understand this man's identity. And you will see a vivid depiction from many angles of this complex figure, Jesus. But what you will find, if you are truly dedicated to looking through what this book has to say about him, is that all of these complexities, they all come into focus as they converge on one central conviction about who this Jesus is. It's a striking statement. It's been at the heart of the faith of the true church from the very beginning until today. The answer to the question about who this man Jesus is stunning. Do you know what it is? This man is Emmanuel. God with us. At the very center of the faith of the New Testament is this conviction. When we look at Jesus, we are looking at God himself. The Gospel of John puts it like this. In the beginning, before there was anything else, before anything at all existed, God existed. God was there. And with God, there was the Word. In the beginning, this Word was with God, and this Word was God. Nothing that existed came into being except through this Word. And that Word, this is fantastic, that Word that was with God at the beginning, that Word became flesh and dwelt among us. That means that Jesus Christ, who was in the beginning and equal with God, did not consider his equality with God something to be grasped, but he humbled himself and became a servant. And being found in human likeness, Jesus became obedient to death on a cross. It means that when we look at Jesus Christ, we are seeing God become man. Think of this for a moment. That means when we observe how Jesus uses his eyes, we are seeing how God uses his eyes. Jesus is God among us. Now you'll notice that statement, Jesus is God among us. That's meaningful only to the degree that we know what we mean by the word God. And this is important. When the church says, or when we believe that Jesus is God incarnate, we can't mean God in general, just some vague deity, however we happen to imagine the Almighty. The Scriptures don't leave any room for that way of thinking about it. The God who Jesus is not God in general. He's the God of the people of Israel. Open up the Old Testament and observe what you find there, and it is this, that there is a God of a man called Abraham and his descendants, Isaac and Jacob. This God meets a man named Moses in a burning bush, and he tells Moses his name, Yahweh. This Yahweh delivers the people from oppression in Egypt. He sets them free. He guides them through the wilderness, and he puts them in the land of Jerusalem. And he gives them a city to dwell in. And they build a temple, and he promises to be there forever. This is Yahweh. And in the words of the poets of Israel, this Yahweh is not like any other God. Chiefly for this reason. Yahweh is alive. And all the other false gods that people worship, they're dead. In Psalm 115, it's put like this. Our God, Yahweh, is in the heavens, and He does whatever He pleases. But their idols, they're made of silver and gold, the work of human hands. They have ears, but they can't hear. They have mouths, but they can't speak. They have hands, but they can't feel. Feet, but they can't walk. They have eyes, but they can't see. Yahweh, the God of Israel, has eyes, and He can see. And when we look at Jesus, when we observe what He does with His eyes, what we are seeing is how God sees. Now, in just a short number of weeks, we'll be celebrating Easter together as a community. Do you know what the message of Easter is? Anybody want to say it? Yeah, He is risen. Who? Yes. Just think of this for a moment. Christianity has become so familiar to many of us that it ceases to be as strange as it is. But this man, not a make-believe man, a real man, God in the flesh, lives and walks around. He walks through the world that came into being through Him. He hears the sounds that depend on Him for their existence. He touches and He moves. He speaks and He sees with His own eyes. And then, at the end of His life, He dies. He watches with these eyes of God as His own people bring Him to a trial at which He's killed. And He does, in fact, die. He is looking out on those who've murdered Him as He expires and ceases to live. Jesus, God incarnate, dies. But then, and this is what we celebrate at Easter, but then death is too weak to hold Him down. He in fact overcomes it and returns to life, not to the life that He used to have, not to the life that will one day have death in it again, but into a new life, a life that is incorruptible, that will never be subject to decay or death any longer, so that Jesus returns to a life that will go on eternally from that point forward. 3 days later, He rose from the grave, and He is alive. And He will continue to be alive from then until forever. And not without His eyes. Jesus is alive. And as surely as I speak to you tonight, He is seeing still. He sees. He saw that hypocritical father as I sat across from him at that coffee shop. He saw my friend betray me. Jesus saw everything that sophomore in college did to all of those people. Close your eyes again. Let the hypocrite that you know, the betrayer, the backstabber that you know, the sinner in your own life who has caused so much misery, let each one of those three come before your eyes again. I want you to see them. Jesus is alive, and He also sees them. The one that you see as an object of your hatred, He sees as an object of love. The one that you see as a reject, He sees as a potential companion. The one you see as a target for punishment, He sees as a recipient of His mercy and His forgiveness. Now, if you are going to be a disciple of His, you have a decision to make. It's simple. You either forsake your way of seeing those around you so that you can see them through the eyes of Jesus, the living God, or you continue looking at them with your own eyes. And I will tell you, if you choose that, you will never actually see them as they are. And here's why. Yes, Yahweh, the living God, has eyes and He sees. But do you know what's true about His seeing? He does not see as mortals see. Mortals look at the outward appearance. That's what we see. With our eyes we look and we see whatever there is on the outside. And it makes its impression on us and it causes us to react. But Yahweh, God, the living God, Jesus Christ, does not see in that way. He sees into the heart. He sees past the masks that we put up. He sees past the masquerades that we put on to try to make people think of us in one way or another. He sees right through the messes that we've made of ourselves in our sin and our poor choices. And He sees through our betrayal and our hypocrisy and our sin, right into the heart of who we are. And the challenge for us as people who go by the name Christians is to choose to forsake our own failing eyesight and instead see through His eyes. And I don't mean in the abstract. I mean the hypocrite who will cause you to cringe. I mean the sinner who will hurt you. And I mean the backstabber who will betray you. Now close your eyes one more time, because there is one more person that I want you to put before your eyes and to look at. Let yourself come before your eyes for a moment. Be honest here. No need for pretending. Let yourself and all of your faults and all of your folly stand there right before you, just as you are. Not as you make other people believe you look, but as you actually are. Do you see the hypocrisy in this person, which if seen clearly would be cause for hatred? Do you see the backstabbing, betraying traitor there before you who shouldn't be trusted at all? Do you see in yourself the sinner who has by all accounts earned the punishment you've been so ready to give to others? If you do not see that, you must know that Jesus does. For He looks at you and me too, and in you and in me, He sees all three of these things far better than any of us can in ourselves. But get this. When Jesus beholds you, He sees someone He has already forgiven. Someone He delights in showing mercy. Not someone He grudgingly forgives, but someone who He is overwhelmed with joy to lavish forgiveness and mercy upon. That's what He sees when He looks at you. When He sees you, He sees through all your betrayal. And He sees someone to whom He says, even though you failed Him 100 times, you, friend, follow me. Walk alongside me. Become my companion. Let me be your master and Lord. Join in with me in this mission that I have in the world. Yes, I know you've betrayed me 100 times. I'm sure you will again. But once again, I'm ready to trust you. You come with me and follow me. He looks. Jesus Christ now looks at your hypocrisy, which you could never hide from Him, and He sees someone who whom he loves. His eyes are the eyes of mercy, of trust, and of love. The eyes of the living God, and he looks at you, and he sees someone who belongs to him. And do you know how it makes him feel? It makes him glad. Let your eyes see others and see this last person, yourself, through Jesus' eyes. And you will live in one way, in the reality of his resurrection, as he looks upon you now. Let's pray together.